on This Balloon has a voice, and so do you. Help lift the whole crew by donating to Fundrive 2025. Donate now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573 and help us rise higher and reach further.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded October 29th, 2025. While good news for China, the Trump administration's unacknowledged undoing of former President Obama's Asia pivot means terrible days to come for America's backyard, also known as the Western Hemisphere. Caribbean nations are discovering that. Venezuela is fully mobilized for defense against a U.S. fleet, including the USS Gerald Ford Carrier Group, currently circling belligerently off its coast as Colombia prepares to be added to the Yankee target list following President Gustavo Petro's vociferous criticism of Trump announcements regarding and actions against its near neighbors, even as the rest of the Caribbean reacts to the string of extrajudicial executions in the form of boat bombings triumphantly carried out by America's military. Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Dan represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's death squad, and he's now President Gustavo Petro's legal representative in the United States. Dan's book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interests, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, and his latest co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmarov is Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Dan Kovalik in the first half. And despite rumors of peace in Palestine, the Holocaust in Gaza continues, and nearly 2 years on, Israel's military continues targeting lawyers, engineers, journalists, professors, and all those people whose skills are required to operate a functioning society. Dr. Deidre Noonan is a Canadian orthopedic surgeon who has spent years in humanitarian medicine working in the field in Central and West Asia, Africa, and the Caribbean. She spent 3 weeks of her summer in Nasser Hospital, Gaza, and is back home now telling Canadians from coast to coast to coast just what the cost of their nation's continued support of Israel means for the people where its bombs land. Dr. Deidre Noonan and coming home from Gaza's killing fields in the second half. But first, Dan Kovalik and Making Monroe Doctrine Again. Well, welcome back to the program, Dan.
Thanks, Chris. It's always a pleasure.
Well, the pleasure's mine, of course. Now, Dan, your client, President Petro of Colombia, is a target of American justice. Firstly, Dan, what are the charges being laid against him or made against him?
Well, right now there's not any charges, but he is now on what they call the OFAC list, meaning he's on this blacklist where essentially his economic life will be, greatly constrained, if not, threatened with destruction, because he won't be able to have money in most banks. And in fact, his monies have already been frozen.
And not just him, his kids and associates.
And his wife. Well, his one son and his wife. For example, you can't transact any business with any company in the world that also does business with the United States. So even now, his wife is trying to get back from Europe to Colombia, and it's a question whether she can travel on Air France to get home, So, it's a very destructive thing they have done to he and his family. Now, again, he's not being charged in the sense that there's no criminal charges at this point, but they are alleging, as far as we can tell, that some involvement in a drug cartel, and Trump had publicly made that allegation. I mean, it's completely frivolous. In fact, Petro has been fighting the drug cartels his entire life, even as a senator years ago when I first met him. But that's what they're alleging, and that's what they're basing the OFAC designation on. Of course, it follows, not coincidentally, with his UN address, which he made a couple weeks ago, a fiery address criticizing the genocide in Gaza. And the U.S. is threatening the sovereignty of Venezuela. And he actually went out on the street. He joined some protesters and gave a speech. And at that point, the U.S. withdrew his visa and threw him out of the country. And this OFAC designation followed shortly after that. So it seems that that's really the causes belli in this case.
Well, what about this bounty then? That there's a rumored or supposed, if I'm getting the number right, $50 million American dollar bounty on his head. If there's
that's
no
Nicolas Maduro,
I'm getting my wires crossed.
Okay. Well, his next door neighbor, Nicolas Maduro, does have a $50 million bounty on his head,
and he's a drug dealer too, though, right? According
well,
to
that's
the
what
United
they
States,
say,
and,
of course.
So is yeah. this so is that a formalized charge against Maduro, and is that where the weight of the bounty on his head comes from? Because there is formal charges against him.
I don't know of formal charges. You know, they're just offering $50 million if to anyone who kills him. Or
it's dead or alive then. Well, I guess it would.
It is dead or alive, or helps lead to his capture. So, they're openly threatening to kill foreign leaders, which, you know, obviously the U.S. has been in the business of killing foreign leaders for a long time, but it's technically illegal under U.S. law to do so. And certainly in recent times, to the extent the U.S. does try to murder foreign leaders, they do so covertly and in a means where there's some deniability. Now, obviously, that doesn't make it any better. But now Trump is openly saying that he is going to, in the case of Maduro, the president of Venezuela, I mean, he's openly talking about having him killed, overthrown, and or killed. This is kind of it's kind of back to the future. This is more old-time colonialism, the type of thing you would hear from leaders, you know, in the earlier part of the 20th century and before that. Again, at least since the founding of the UN in 1945, U.S. presidents, at least, again, have tried to have more of a, at least, diplomatic tone. And Trump is much more open in his aggression. And, of course, is threatening to invade Venezuela. There has not been a U.S. major U.S. invasion of a country in this hemisphere since, I believe, 1989, when George H.W. Bush invaded Panama and killed people in working-class neighborhoods in Panama City. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people. It's really not known. A lot of them remain buried under rubble, so we don't know the extent of the casualties, but it's very high. And again, that was the last time that you had this open aggression in this hemisphere. You know, there's been a lot of covert actions, of course, and actions through proxies, but to be threatening to use the U.S. military to invade another country in this hemisphere, it hasn't been done often in recent years, and certainly not in the 21st century. So,
well, something else that I don't know that if this has ever been done is this preemptive destroying of ocean going vessels on the pretext that they're breaking some kind of law. And Trump is fond of Stephen Miller's 25,000 American lives are saved every time one of these hapless boats is destroyed, presumably because they're carrying fentanyl, which can be a very lethal drug, as it's been proven over the years. Oddly enough, one of the countries that has been attacked in this hemisphere by the United States four times in its history, in fact, Canada, was we were blamed with being fentanyl drug importers to the United States before that led to the trade problems we're having with the United States from up here. But thankfully, our Prime Minister Carney, I don't think there's a bounty on his head, not yet, at least. But it seems like a very long lever, this fentanyl and drugs smuggling charge in the American diplomatic arsenal.
Yeah, although, you know, Senator Rand Paul, I think, gave a very good, concise criticism of this policy of the U.S. towards Venezuela, saying that Venezuela doesn't produce any fentanyl, you know, and no fentanyl is coming out of Venezuela. Most of the fentanyl coming to the U.S. is coming through the Pacific Ocean, I believe mostly from China. So this attack on these boats makes no sense from that point of view. As Rand Paul also pointed out, these boats that are being attacked are small vessels that would need to refuel 20 times before getting to the United States, which is not a real practical possibility, you know. So, I mean, it seems unlikely that these boats have had drug dealers on them and that they're just murdering innocent people. We know in the case of the folks from Trinidad and Tobago who were killed that they were just fishermen. So, but in any case, you know, the idea, yeah, that you would just incinerate people without any due process, right? If you think someone's trying to sell drugs, the thing to do is to apprehend them in a legal way, to try them in a court of law, to convict them and sentence them. And by the way, they wouldn't be sentenced to death because drug trafficking is not a capital crime, not in the United States. So, you know, none of this is legal. None of this is moral, but it's just, you know, this is just blatant murder what's happening. But yeah, as you say, this is kind of another level that we're seeing.
Well, the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago about her citizens, and to be fair to her, it was before her citizens were discovered, you know, to be washing up on the beaches of the Caribbean, blown to smithereens. When the killings first began, she said, quote, "I have no sympathy for drug traffickers. The U.S. military should kill them all violently." So this is in a case of sentence before trial or execution before defense. This is the prevailing attitude, at least from those that would seek or succor or favor from the Trump regime.
Yeah, but it's of course insane. By the way, Trinidad is going to help the U. Is you know, willing to help the U.S. in logistical support for any invasion of Venezuela. So, I mean, that's the other thing. The U.S. isn't making any allegations against Trinidad, and yet they killed some of their citizens. So, which really underscores how crazy this policy is. I mean, there is no rule of law anymore, is the truth of it. And as someone who practiced human rights law, who taught human rights law, I mean, just to see it be totally disregarded and thrown out the window, it's hard to watch, you know. And of course, what's happening in Gaza is really the worst example of that. And I think once the Rubicon was crossed in Gaza, when you see these horrible crimes being committed on a mass scale in Gaza by the U.S. and Israel, I mean, the U.S. is a party to it, you know. Once they cross those lines, I mean, anything then could be done. And that's what, you know, that's what we're seeing. There are no bounds. There are no bounds to the violence and cruelty that the U.S. is willing to perpetrate in the world. And they're not even pretending otherwise. In fact, they're flaunting it, aren't they? I mean, it seems Trump wants to send the message to the world that we will kill anyone at any time.
Yeah. Well, that Rubicon, you could mark it in a number of places over history as far as the United States is concerned. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm talking today with Dan Kowalik. Dan's a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. He's represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's death squads. He is serving as Colombian President Gustavo Petro's legal representative in the United States and has done for some time. His book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interests, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care. And his latest is co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmarov, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Yeah, when you say, Dan, it's hard to watch Ken Roth, I was just reading this morning, he has a piece up in The Guardian, both of which you can take with a grain of salt. But he was a former head of Amnesty International. He's an international lawyer. He says, quote, Trump's saber rattling in Venezuela is illegal. I mean, that is the title of his piece. The United Nations agrees. They say, quote, preparations for covert or direct military action against another state constitute an even graver breach of the UN Charter, even graver than blowing up boats in the Caribbean. That's what they were talking about. That from an expert panel of three rapporteurs. At the United Nations. Everybody agrees that this is not a legal action. I'm not even sure if the United States and Donald Trump have claimed otherwise, that what they're doing is legal. I think they take it for granted that they can do whatever they want, but I could be wrong. Has there been any defense or any claim of a right to prosecute in this manner made by the administration, Dan?
They don't seem to be saying it's legal. In fact, again, it seems to me they're trying to send the message they'll do it despite the fact that it may be illegal, right? Their view is that international law does not apply to them, you know, and they want to show that. And that's, that's what, again, this, it seems to be an exercise in trying to demonstrate that it, that there are no bounds, again, moral or legal, that the U.S. is unwilling to cross.
Well, and you mentioned Israel and what's happening and what they've been doing in Palestine these last 2 years. Of course, it's been many, much longer than that, but accelerated since October 7th, 23. There was the tightest possible diplomatic arrangements and relations between Colombia and Israel before Petro got into power. It must be just earth-shattering for those in Colombia, and his majority is quite narrow, Petro's is, but it must be shattering for those that were a part of those good old days, that as they would have them, to see Petro challenging Israel and making other moves to sanction them and to cut off relations with them. It makes me wonder how secure, Dan, is Petro within Colombia, within, against these the former foes that he fought literally against as a rebel and then politically afterwards, after the peace?
Well, I think we've all wondered that. I mean, I think even in the when it was, looked pretty good that he would win the presidential election, a lot of us feared he might be killed. I think he's in grave danger. For the reasons you say, the right wing is still very powerful in Colombia. The right wing really has governed, before Petro, they had governed Colombia pretty much in an unbroken way for decades and had murdered hundreds of thousands of people. As you say, they had a very close alliance with Israel and the United States. And Petro is a threat to everything, they stand for. So I think that Petro is in a very vulnerable situation, and he's been very courageous. I mean, that he has been willing to do what he's done in the face of those kinds of threats is pretty amazing. And by the way, so he, under the Constitution of Colombia, he cannot run for a consecutive second term. So his term is up. And there will be elections in May, and the person who was elected to run in his party is Ivan Cepeda, who's even more radical than Petro. He's in the Communist Party of Colombia. His father was a leader of the Communist Party. He was assassinated, actually. And he's an amazing guy. So I think part of the attacks on Petro now are designed to try to influence the election, right, and to make sure his party and Ivan Cepeda do not win that election in May.
Well, Colombia has been a vital part of America's strategy to control and contain Venezuela as well. We saw that before Petro got in, that that weird Bay of Piglets, so-called, that this strange attempt to infiltrate Venezuela, and the goal being to kidnap or kill President Maduro in Venezuela. Without that, the U.S. has to look somewhere else. And when it comes to the real drug dealers in the region, it seems that that Ecuador is the next candidate, the next launching place, other than Trinidad and Tobago, which should be, I should just hasten to say that here on Vancouver Island, we're very close to the United States. I can look out my kitchen window and I can see the purple majesty of the American Olympic Ridge. It's only some score miles away, but Trinidad and Tobago is less than half of that distance. They're right there where the U.S. has thousands of soldiers right now preparing and ships coming and going and to Venezuela. They're right in there. But at any rate, the situation politically in Colombia is a hindrance to the American goal in Venezuela. I guess what I'm reaching for is what role the importance of that relationship to the United States in their in their designs on Venezuela.
Yes, well, very important. I mean, I think it cannot be understated how close of an ally Colombia has been to the United States. Really, since 1962, they were very much designated as a very key part of John F. Kennedy's so-called national security doctrine, which didn't have much to do with national security, but had a lot to do with destroying the social movements in Latin America. And Colombia was the epicenter of that. And the U.S. began, you know, creating these paramilitary death squads in Colombia, even before the ones in El Salvador. You know, a lot of people talk about the Salvador option and they're referring to the death squads, but really it's the Colombian option. I believe that was the first place the U.S. began this death squad strategy. And again, it started in Colombia, and Colombia's been used as a place from which the U.S., in the words, and I forget what U.S. leader said it, but they said specifically to project U.S. power through the region. Colombia has been our beachhead. So it cannot be understated how losing Colombia has been a significant loss to the United States and its goals of dominating the region. Even a lot of people don't realize Colombia, up till recently, was a NATO partner. That's how close Colombia was to the West, that it would be a partner of NATO's, strangely enough. But Petro recently announced that he was leaving NATO as well, right? So, you know, all those things in the minds of the United States are quite unforgivable.
Well, do you think, as you said, his term is running out, and if there's even a more radical successor, that the chances, because Petro got in, it was a very thin margin when he was elected. Somebody more radical might not be able to sway even that many people over to his side, that should the opposition gain power after Petro, that all of these things will be reversed, that then Colombia all of a sudden is the bosom buddy to the United States and Israel again, and back in NATO and threatening Venezuela once again.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think it's going to be an uphill battle for this Ivan Cepeda. Although, you know, he kind of transcends politics in a lot of ways. He's very beloved as a political figure, as a human being. And so if there's anyone, you know, with his radical politics who could win, it would be him. But I do think, you know, the U.S. will do everything they can to keep him from winning. and having another term with someone from the left in power in Colombia. Yeah, I mean, I think the designs in Venezuela, you know, are really impossible to meet if Colombia is not in the camp of the United States on this.
Yeah, so now, Dan, switching gears a little bit, we're seeing this massive hurricane going through the Caribbean right now. Are you hearing anything from your friends down there, especially in Cuba, which there was another vote in the UN about the sanction, the blockado against the American blockado against Cuba? Are you hearing anything from your friends in Cuba and in the region of about what's going on down there now climactically?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of concern in Jamaica and Cuba in particular. You know, this is a Category 5 hurricane. That's the highest strength category. I think there were, you know, wind gusts of over 200 miles an hour. I think this was like a record of hurricane force winds. And so inevitably there's going to be a lot of loss of life and a lot of devastation. And, you know, and that's, you know, how sad is it that the U.S. with all of its resources could be helping people in that situation, right? But instead, in the midst of a hurricane, instead they're focusing on causing more destruction in Venezuela. I mean, it's just really the lost opportunity there is so heartbreaking, really.
Well, maybe China.
Well, maybe. But again, the U.S. being so close to these places and with, again, with its military, it could go in to construct things and reconstruct things. And it could be a force for creation instead of destruction. And that is the greatest tragedy here, you know, and it has been for a long, long time with my country, sadly.
Well, and we see with the White House itself, it seems symbolic that as the East Wing is now rubble, there seems to be an active, a concerted effort to do just that, to destroy America from within. I can't make sense of it otherwise.
Yeah, well, and how the, you know, with the violence that ICE is perpetrating throughout the country against non-citizens and citizens alike. I mean, really, they're completely unhinged, have no brakes on them, you know, masked people roaming the streets, beating people up, arresting people. It's just shocking. It's shocking. I mean, even in the U.S., which I've always been critical of course, but this is another level, Chris. I mean, it's very sad.
Well, and the world watches on. I'm not sure that Americans appreciate how closely they're watched, certainly by Canada, but by the whole world. And everyone is absolutely gobsmacked, I'm sure, to see these hooded guys roaming the streets with machine guns and abducting people and all these YouTube videos. I mean, it's incredible to watch, and we all wonder, well, if this is the leader of the free world, are we bound to follow in this direction too? Something's got to break. Dan, what we do have to do is we have to break because we don't have any more time today. Do you want to direct people, Dan, to how they can get a hold of your books and find your work?
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter at Daniel M. Kovalik, and also you can get my books. My latest book is from Baraka Books. It's a Syria, Anatomy of a Regime Change. And many of my other books are at skyhorsepublishing.com.
Well, thanks again for coming on, Dan. I'm going to take a break now, and I'll be back with Deidre Noonan, a Canadian orthopedic surgeon who was in Gaza. She's been in there more than once, but she was on a talking tour just recently in Canada, talking about her experiences there. Thanks again for coming on, eh, Dan?
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it, Chris.
Escape the Narrative. Guerrilla Radio.
There's a certain moment, if you're lucky enough, when you might so viscerally understand. understand so hard how all of us are all members of the human family. Some people hear a song, others fall in love, some people leave home and see the world.